Oh, yeah, the Hare Krishna man in the Bristol Broadmeat said to me, oh, why do you eat meat? Because, you know, Jesus only ate honey and curd. And I said to them, well, you know what? I've never come across that text before. And you know what, Tony? I went to him and had a look. And truly, it's in the book of Isaiah. Not that Jesus didn't eat meat, but Jesus, when he was born, ate honey and curd. It was the food of poverty for poor people. And the Bible rightly tells us Jesus was born into poverty. But also the food of the people who conquered, you know, Jerusalem. The Assyrians brought their honey and curd as a staple diet. And so the Israelites picked up that food and ate it as their food. You know, so, but if he hadn't challenged me on that, I wouldn't have gone and looked for it. And he was right in the sense that Jesus did eat honey and curd.
Okay, so what's the latest anyway? I know that, you know, you have been accused, I think maybe say something more a bit about the fact that it's Muslims mainly that have complained about you. But what's the latest?
Well, the latest is that they settled 1 week before we could go to court. So Avon and Somerset Police were making the claim. Well, Tony, it goes. I mean, I'll tell you in a nutshell. They were making the claim that not only am I not supposed to be talking to these people, one of the senior officers who is prepared to testify, he was making the claim that actually my biblical interpretation is not correct. So now the police officers have leaned over into biblical interpretation, into hermeneutics. They're now qualified to interpret what the Bible says. So this particular police officer, together with some other officers, were prepared to stand in court and say, Dear Murli and his congregation have wrongly interpreted marriage, or have wrongly interpreted gender and sexuality, have wrongly interpreted the sanctity of life from the Bible. We believe, so when I say we believe, they believe that we'd got it totally wrong, and therefore biblical interpretation is important in the public square. I mean, they were prepared to make that ludicrous statement in court. Our lawyers challenged them, so 1 week before the case could go to court, they contacted us and they offered us a settlement. So they settled the case on the fact that they said, well, we pushed for an apology, but that was hard to come. And so they said that if you read the article, and also on GB News, it was last week, that they said that their action toward me was disproportionate. So I had to settle for that word, disproportionate. And the downside for them is that they're now stuck with all the legal fees for both sides, which nobody in our city should be happy about, because where's this money coming from? It's taxpayers' money that they're paying. So we told them that don't do this, don't go down this road. But yet the constabulary, and I think the Freedom of Information would let us know, that this constabulary has taken on so many cases that they've lost, and they've wasted taxpayers' money because officers have dug their heels in and said they're right, and the person that they're contending with is wrong, like myself, and they're prepared to go all the way to prove it and find that, no, listen, they were wrong, and they've wasted their money.
Well, I think you'll find exactly the same with the city council. They keep losing court cases too. I've been involved in one myself where they were trying to exclude travellers, get an injunction to exclude travellers, and they would have spent many thousands of pounds on that pointless, well, we would thought was a pointless case, and lost. So anyway, what do you think of the lessons here, if you take a step back from it all?
The lessons are very worrying. I think there's I think we're going to see a lot more threat to freedom of speech. I think that the police, for me here in Bristol, are going to think, well, they obviously think twice now before approaching me. We're still, you know, Christians at the end of the day. I've gone back into the constabulary in January. After the case was settled, I went back into the constabulary against all my Christian friends across the country saying to me, don't go back to work with them. I've gone back to work with them. I've met with the new chief inspector, and I said to them, here I am. This is who I am. I'm coming back to work with you. I said, you've just lost a case, but I don't think this is the end of the road for us. Let's do better. So I'm back to working with them, and they've been in contact with me. They want to work with me. They want to work with our congregation, and I think we could do well if we do work together. However, there are some people within the constabulary that still want to go down the same road that we went down previously, and we're learning how to deal with them. So the lesson here is, I think, you know, we continue to communicate and make sure that we do better for Bristol. But I think the overarching worrying thing, not only for Bristol but across our nation, is that we're going to be more, and I want to put this most mildly, but hopefully get the point across. I think we're going to be more worried about what not to say about certain groups, because we're scared of how we're going to be interpreted, and we're scared that those people are going to get offended, even if we ask a really, you know, a critical question or a question that we want an answer to. We're going to be accused of some kind of offense against them or discrimination against them.
Well, I mean, I think Jesus was accused of all sorts of things, wasn't he, as well? So maybe that's par for the course.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, one of the things you asked me in your message to me, why is it that we are seeing so many, you know, so much of animosity towards the preaching? And that's a very good question. I've been asked it a number of times. And, you know, even as Easter is coming up now, you know, we recognize the Passion Week and historical context. And one of the things in the historical context is the Roman ruler asked the people, who would you have? Would you have Jesus or would you have Barabbas? And, you know, Barabbas was an insurrectionist, is a rebel against the Roman authorities. He tried to bring the Roman government down. And the people said, no, we don't want this Jesus. Give us Barabbas. So they chose a murderer insurrectionist over a man who was who they couldn't find anything wrong with. Why would they choose that? Because Jesus was convicting them of their hypocrisy. He was showing them that the religious system wasn't working, that the rich would sit at the front of the synagogue and the poor would sit at the back, and special preferences were given to people and sin reigned. And so the more man is provoked about his wrongdoings, the more he responds in anger and animosity against the one who brings out the news. And there was a Puritan who once said, truth always has a scratched face. And so people will try to scratch the face of the person who's trying to bring truth.
Well, yeah, I mean, what Jesus was doing was he was disturbing the authorities as much as he was disturbing the population. He didn't really discriminate between either.
Absolutely.
So, and also, of course, his message was aimed at hearts, whereas Barabbas's political activism was aimed at people's heads. You know, this is almost sort of difference between politics and spirituality. So what about press? I know you've done international and national interviews about this, and I've seen quite a bit around in the national internet world as well. What about the regional press in the southwest of England? Have they taken up an interest? Because that's where the story is based.
Yeah, I mean, they were very quick to put pictures of me in the newspaper when I was preaching. But I don't think anyone's picked up the story locally. I think you're the only person locally who's taken the time to get involved with this. So we obviously, you know, go back a few years, but nevertheless, you're the only one to pick interest in this, and I'm thankful for that. I mean, the Bristol press hasn't picked up on it. I mean, it's good if it does get out, because the public needs to know that this is the amount of money spent, really. Taxpayers' money spent on a case that should not have been spent on, because really it was this church, my congregation, and in our leadership, we had a good working relationship with the police, and so that we could prevent these kind of things from happening, that we don't have to go to court and spend all this kind of money. But yet, you know, that obviously broke down, and we had to take up this legal case. But if somebody, you know, well, I don't know, somebody should tell the press about this so that we could expose it for what it is. Even in someone said I spent close to £80,000 now on this legal case. Mm-hmm. And, that's taxpayers' money.
It is. Finally, can you just go through some of those hot-button issues that you think, that you preach about? I know we've mentioned abortion, this sort of thing. Go through some of the ones that you think are the ones that people find difficult, controversial, because we've got this sort of thing which is a sort of churchy consensus around lots of things. It's a bit like science. You know, we think, oh yes, evolution is just a fact now. Certainly when I was young in the 1970s, it was taught as a theory. It's now a fact. But which do you think are the most important things that you talk about that really get the public going?
I think you know, it's never my intention to get the public going. It's my intention to get the public interest. So this Saturday we'll be out again, and I'm deciding which signboard to use. We have one signboard that says "Ask any question," but we have other signboards that speak of specific subjects that we speak about. And I'm just looking maybe this Saturday to once again address the issue of gender. You know, we have a lot of young people in Bristol that are really confused over their gender, and my message would be from the Bible about how to be rid of that confusion and find clarity about who you are, being, you know, created in the image of God and not a result of random chance and coincidence, as evolution says. And so that will obviously attract attention. And there are some people who will really listen to what we had to say 2 weeks ago. When I say the man pulled me off the ladder, before he could do that, there was a young man who asked me a question about gender, and he absolutely listened to the answer, you know, because he said to me, you know, do you believe you can be, I said to him, do you believe I can be whatever I want to be? And he says, yes. And I said, I'm a 56-year-old black man. Can I be a 9-year-old white girl called Jane? And he says, no. And I said, you see, this is where the conversation breaks down. This is where your argument breaks down, because you realize there are limits to it. You can't push this any further than what it is. And so he stood for half an hour and listened to me, and others gathered to listen. So it's the gender issue. And then we get the questions asked all the time about sexuality, in a sense of tied up with marriage. So we make the case of biblical marriage between a man and a woman for life. Obviously, the other matter of abortion, like you said, we don't preach on abortion all the time. We try to limit it to maybe once a month, so that you know, we don't be recognized as this group that constantly talks about that. But we will make reference to it in our preaching, because if you preach through the Ten Commandments, "Thou shalt not murder" is one of them. And we must be able to talk about murder, of what murder is. It's not one particular question. It's other questions as well. But equally, the Muslim can get upset if we talk about who Jesus Christ is in the Bible compared to what Muhammad said about, you know, Jesus Christ. Muslims get upset about that. There's a number of hot button points.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, you've been through quite a few there. Look, I always find it a bit bizarre, really, because, of course, every religion wants people to believe in it and not other religions. But it's a question of how you do that. Do you do it respectfully, kindly, or do you do it in a sort of puritanical smash, crash, bang, wallop, ISIS-style fashion? You know. Anyway, look, whereabouts can people find your church online? When are you and follow? You know, what's been going on in Bristol here?
Well, thanks for asking that. So we're currently we just bought a property in Lockleys, so we're in Lockleys on Romney Avenue. That's where the actual building is. The church itself travels from, as far as Gloucester, Cheltenham and Taunton and Bridgewater, and all the way, they come up every Sunday to Bristol and spend the day here. We're available online at spiritoflife.org.uk. My sermons are on YouTube, podcasts as well on YouTube. They're called Spirit of Life Church Sermons. And the information on us, on how to contact us, or you want to know more about us, is available on our website. That address again, spiritoflife.org.uk.
Okay, so 5-year-old girl called Jane, or else pastor in his 50s, male, dear Moodley, thanks very much for joining us.
Tony, thank you so much.